just want to get to know you first a little bit. So tell us about your family, a little bit about your background and where you are today in life.
Okay. My husband's here with me.
Can anybody hear her? I'm going to make sure everybody can hear her. Good.
Can you hear me?
And your husband is? Yep.
That's Mike. We've been married 16 years. He's so cute.
He is. Look around, Mike, somebody can tell that. Congratulations. 16 years of marriage. Children?
Yes. Two boys. I cannot believe this. I'm about to have a teenager. I still feel like a teenager inside my brain, so yeah. The fact that I'm about to have a teenager. And they are definitely smarter than us. They outwit us on a daily basis. My youngest, who's in fifth grade, lives to challenge. He says he's going to be a lawyer or a judge, and he is well on his way. And I have three very persnickety cats.
Three.
And I live in Wilsonville, which is south of Portland. I work for emailbroadcast.com as a copywriter, so I get to work out of my house, which is just a sweet aroma.
Awesome. Awesome. Very good. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you for being willing to share your story about, an unfair wake-up call or maybe a number in a row for you and how you've handled them. You've got quite a story to share with us, so just want you to go ahead and begin to share your story that, as we have already been prompted, it's about abuse and human trafficking.
Okay. We kind of, my husband and I talk about, I was like a little teeny brown mustard seed, little teeny when I was born. I was 2 pounds because my mom was an addict, and back then in the 70s, they weren't necessarily looking out for that. So I was so small that my sisters used to carry me around in a shoebox and dress me in their baby doll clothes. And it didn't get better from there for a while, I can say. When I was a toddler, my mom trafficked me and my sisters. So somewhere between the ages of 3 and 6-ish, I don't know if we assume that she was doing it because she was a cocaine addict. I'm not sure why. My sisters remember a lot more of it than I do because they're 6 and 7 years older. But they remember drug parties where we were the focus. And so they would give us drugs and then do terrible things. And my sisters remember cars with strangers. And luckily for me, it's flashes of memory more than anything. And then when I was around 6, my mom got married. And prior to that, she had always dated the dealers. She dated a lot of drug dealers. So there was always pretty bad men in our life around me and my sisters. And she got married, and I was so excited because I thought, I'm going to have a dad. It's going to be amazing. I'm going to be somebody's princess. But that's not how it worked out. Unfortunately, my stepdad was kind of like all the other men my mom hung out with. And I remember one time my sister talked on the phone too long. We had a 15-minute limit, and so he broke her jaw. But I loved him. I loved him because he was the only dad I knew. His brother, from probably age 6 to, 11, 12, did terrible things to me as well during that time, and many other girls. In our house and in my grandparents' house, my step-grandparents' house. And it was around 13 that I decided enough. And so me and my girlfriend, we went downtown and we went to the police and we turned in my step-uncle and in a way, it felt like the worst decision I could have ever made. Because if I thought my life was bad before, this completely destroyed my life. My family took his side. And called me a whore and all kinds of terrible things. And the police wanted some more proof, and I had journaled about it. And the journal was hidden in my room, and I wasn't at home because they didn't put me back right away. And told my mom where it was, and my mom went and got the journal, but instead of giving it to the police, she gave it to my stepfamily. And they stalked me, and they would show up at places. You know, I was 12, 13, I'd go to the roller rink, and they would show up, and they would scream out passages from the diary. And there was a trial, and the day of the trial, it was just me and my sister, who was 19 at the time. And when there's a trial, they put you in this kind of big bullpen of tons of people, and we were sitting there, and my stepfamily was sitting on the other side of the room, constantly yelling things over to me and saying things, and felt like we had to wait forever. And my stepdad came running out of some other room and knelt down next to us and said, "It's over." He took a plea bargain. And in that moment, it was the worst thing he could have said for me, because I knew that my family was never going to be there for me, and I turned. I made a decision. I said, I'm not going to rely on a man. Obviously, that changed. worked really hard, got a scholarship, went to college, and things changed there, too. But that's the gist of the childhood part.
Good for you, yeah, that you made it through. When I first heard Nikki's story, she was sharing on the phone with Lori and me. It was hard to take, and perhaps there's some right here in this room that are struggling with what she's had to go through and can't even connect. Now, there might be a couple more in this room that are saying, yeah, I get that. I've been there. And so, you know, just to kind of get into the wake-up call, negative, very unfair kind of wake-up call, and then what do we do with that? And Nikki's found some ways to kind of deal with that, but before we get into that directly, obviously we're a church, so we're trying to follow God, and you haven't heard God yet in her story, but there is God in your story somewhere, isn't there,
mm-hmm.
Nikki?
Mm-hmm.
Can you share that part with us?
It kind of started around when I was 12. I don't want you to look at me and say that I'm brave or strong. It's not it at all. Mike and I kind of joke, and I like to say I'm kind of like a lemon car. Kind of faulty, but God keeps me running. And it was about 12 years old. It was right around the time when I went to the police, and I was laying in my bed, and my stepdad was really violent, and we would always get involved in their fights, me and my sisters, and try and stop the fights. But at this point, my sisters were gone. It was just me. So it was up to me, and I heard them fighting downstairs. And I could hear my stepdad strangling my mom. And I was so afraid. And I thought, God, please. I'd never called out to him before. And I imagined the worst thing at that age. And to me, the worst thing was acne. And I thought, I'll take acne all over my body if you just stop it. And I felt these arms come around me, these physical arms, lift me up and hold me. And the next thing I knew, it was morning, and everything was okay. I didn't commit my life to Christ then, because I didn't know to do that. But I know that it was his strength that got me through all that. It is impossible for a 12-year-old girl to go through that alone, to go to a rape trial, to stand up to a whole family alone. I worked through high school, as I mentioned before, to get a scholarship, and I thought college was going to be my savior. So I went to college, and I completely broke down and fell apart. But I just completely fell apart because nothing was different. Maybe I wasn't in physical danger, but in here was still the same. And I remember I went to a Campus Crusade for Christ person, and I said, if God doesn't talk to me, I'm never going to talk to him again. If he doesn't tell me why he gave me such a crap life. And so she said to me, well, tell him. And so in the courtyard of my college, I screamed and I yelled at God. I told him how he did me wrong. I used every colorful word. And a couple weeks later, I became a Christian. And over the next 10 years, I think I yelled at God every single day. I was full of utter rage. He was so tender with me, so gentle and loving. He never gave up on me. He never yelled back at me. And I knew he had really done something. I think I was 30 and I woke up and I said, I'm grateful for my childhood because it gave me you. It made me tenacious. God has been so good to me. So good.
And we read the Bible, we catch a glimpse of some of this rage or disappointment with God. Have there been any scriptures that have been helpful to you through some of those years that you kind of kept going back to or kept thinking about, or maybe some of the characters in the Bible that maybe you related to best or could relate to best?
I think I was thinking about this recently, and I think that me and God have grown closer because we never stopped talking, even though I was so mad at him and so disappointed. And it's hard as Christians to go to God and be really honest, especially if it involves a bunch of four-letter words and a lot of pain, and we kind of feel like we're not allowed to be mad at God or disappointed. And but we kept talking through all those years, and I was thinking about in Isaiah 30 the other day, the Israelites, they kind of had a wake-up call too, and they were in some trouble, and they were hurt, and they were angry, and instead of going to God, they were turning to Egypt. And he says in verse 1, who take counsel, but not of me, and who devise plans, but not of my spirit, who walk to go down to Egypt and have not asked my advice. And when you're hurting in anger, when I've been hurting in anger, I know it's tempting to not talk to him and seek advice on him about it. Then it says in verse 18, therefore the Lord will wait that he may be gracious to you. And therefore he will be exalted, that he may have mercy on you. For the Lord is a God of justice. Blessed are those who wait for him. For the people shall dwell in Zion at Jerusalem. You shall weep no more. He will be very gracious to you at the sound of your cry. When he hears it, he will answer you. And though the Lord gives you the bread of adversity and the water of affliction, yet your teachers will not be moved into a corner anymore. But your eyes shall see your teachers. Your ears shall hear a word behind you saying, this is the way, walk in it. And then skip down to end of verse 26. In the day that the Lord binds up the bruise of his people and heals the stroke of their wound. God was very gracious to me. We never stopped talking, and that's all he wanted the Israelites to do here. He just wanted them to turn to him. It says in verse 15, in returning in rest, you shall be saved. If you have a wake-up call or something that just makes you really angry and hurt about God, he's just waiting to be gracious like he was to me. And I used to not believe in healing. In that 10 years of being hurt and angry, I didn't believe God was ever going to heal me. But he did exactly what he said he'd do. He bound up my bruises, and he healed the stroke of my wounds. I'm grateful for my childhood. I'm grateful because of him. I just want to say again, don't look at me and think strength and bravery. That's totally not true. It's him and his graciousness. It's just him.
Nikki said something in some correspondence between us in preparation for this morning. She said her rage at God was slowly and tenderly transformed into a great, and use this word, romance with him, full of surprise and delight.
Mm-hmm. He is, sorry, honey, the greatest romance in my life. He has wooed me. Those 10 years were wooing and tender and loving. And while they were probably some of the worst years of my life and dealing with all those wounds from my childhood, he caused me to fall in love with him. And that hasn't changed, and I hope that doesn't change. I bet he's wooing you too now, you as well. Maybe you just didn't know it was wooing.
You said in some of our correspondence this idea of real freedom and how it comes. Can you speak into that a little bit?
I believe that there's real freedom in being completely honest with God. No hiding, no pretending you have your crap together, no pretending you're not angry at him or disappointed or frustrated or confused. The freedom I've experienced has always been in just being utterly honest with him. I'm going to be honest with you. I still have very colorful discussions with him. They're not all pretty and bright and nice words. But every single time I'm honest with him, he swoops in and he puts his arms around me. When we're totally honest with somebody, it opens up something. When it's somebody not who doesn't make good choices or who's not going to take care of your heart, it's very painful. But he's the one that you can guarantee he's going to take care of your heart, and it's going to end up good. And I've experienced great freedom in him just by being completely honest and not hiding from him.
Some of the things I appreciate about you, Nikki, just in the little bit of time we've been able to get to know you, but it's a deep knowledge that we have of your past, of your experience in life. And what you've done with that, which is what I think connects to us, is that you've taken something that could have driven you away from God, and you allowed that to actually drive you to God. He's always there, and you've decided you're going to, through some good counsel, go ahead and let God know how you feel. You know, I mean, David did, of the Old Testament psalmist, King David, he would spread his disappointment out before the Lord. He always end up worshiping God, but he'd always spread that disappointment out about what was going wrong, how he was a fugitive king, and yet he was the one who was after God's own heart, and what did he do with that? And so you just say, go to God, take that counsel that was given to you and give it to us. It says, when we're struggling with one of these wake-up calls that's so unfair, that hurts so badly, that we're in deep pain about, talk to God about it.
And don't stop.
And don't stop. Pursue God about it.
Great. 10 years I yelled at God. And we're talking real yelling. My husband can attest to that.
She's so soft-spoken, it's hard for me to believe that she can raise her voice. But and then you have this humility of spirit about your strength. It's really your weakness and God's strength that you seem to try to relate to us. Is there any more to say about that?
I'm not strong. I strike that from the record. There isn't strength here. I embrace that I'm a lemon. I'm a lemon car. And I love that. I'm going to read to you, I'm sure many of you have heard it. I'm going to read just the last phrase of this verse in 2 Corinthians. For when I am weak, then I am strong. We're just told we have to be strong and together, and I don't see that's how it is at all. I love being weak because he gets to show his muscles. He gets to be strong for me. So I'm really terrified that anybody would say I'm strong or brave, because that hasn't been the case at all. He has been strong for me. And I've really learned to embrace my weakness and just kind of be glad about it. I don't have my stuff together. I don't. And he's the one. He carried me through all that stuff in my childhood. I didn't acknowledge him, but I know that he did. When he put his arms around me, he never took them away, even though I wasn't his yet. He was my strength. And
those are life-changing words for us to again understand our limitations in God's infinite, unlimited, all-powerful ability to help us, to save us, to take us where he wants us to go, which is the best for us. And that's what you're doing. I just want to just to commend you. Would you guys give her a hand here right now? Just And for Nikki's sake, that applause goes to you, right up to God, okay?
Yes, please.
Okay. So you tell us a little bit about the organization that helped you to some degree through what you're doing, that God used, I guess, to help you. And I think we have a brochure here and even a card here that's available for us today. This is an organization that has been doing a lot of good in our community, bringing awareness about the global issue of human trafficking that's right here, prevalent in our area of the country in a special kind of way. It's heated in this area. It's really on fire around this area. And so tell us a little bit about that organization just shortly, if you could, please.
Okay. Called to Rescue. They rescue kids like me and kids that are in way worse situations than I am. Keep in mind, this happened in Ohio that I was trafficked. The numbers that you hear, they aren't accurate. Human trafficking is real and severe. They rescued 1,300 kids, girls and boys, last year. What they do is the reason you don't hear them in Amber Alert is because 74% of them come from the foster care system, and some of the parents don't report them missing so they can keep getting the checks. The average age in our area is 12 years old when they're trafficked, and they're not reported often missing, or they're reported as a runaway, but they're not. It certainly wasn't something that I chose. They go in, they find out a girl is missing or a boy, and it's equal right now, by the way, between girls and boys. And they stake out and they rescue the child. They actually go in and physically and grab that child back. They put the child in safe houses. Sometimes when it's somebody who's well known that's done something to them, they put them and their family in hiding, which is really what I would have wanted at that age, because it was my own family and I needed to be in hiding from them. But they are rescuing girls just like me and who are worse off. And I can't believe what they do. It's a miracle to me, and God is really using them. And the stories that come out of it, so many of them do go on to be functional and full of life. And in non-Christian organizations, they have a higher failure rate because they don't have Jesus there helping them. But these girls and boys, they often get addicted because, like me and my sisters, they're forced to take drugs, and they need a lot of help after too, and Called to Rescue works really hard on all of that. So last year, 1,300 kids, and I'm praying this year for $1 million and double that amount of kids. 1 million girls and boys every year are trafficked. 1 million.
So Nikki, you are an ambassador or speaker for Call to Rescue, the local organization here that's located here. There's brochures mm-hmm. that are back here at our welcome table and some cards, and they could use all kinds of help in different ways. I understand safe houses, there might be a need for some of that, as well as other ways in which people can help, obviously financially. There's a, this coming Saturday evening, mm-hmm. Lori and I attended this last year. It's a banquet that's held as a fundraiser by Call to Rescue, and there's these little flyers that I think were planted inside of your worship folders today. So you're invited to that. In fact, I think Nikki could take, if you wanted to buy any tickets for that even today before she left, she'd be willing to, mm-hmm. she brought some tickets along with her. So I just wanted to let you know about this wonderful organization. There's more organizations in town, I believe. Shared Hope is another organization that some of us have been connected to in the past as well. So, Nikki, this has been probably hard for you, again, to share, but what you're doing is sharing the message of hope and healing, and also a message about a wake-up call that more of us are becoming familiar with in deeper ways of what's going on all around us. But even more than that, you've shared some of these principles about pursuing God in our time of those negative, unfair wake-up calls, mm-hmm. you know, and just continuing to pursue God with what he would have us to do. We just want to thank you today for your presence here, your willingness to speak about something that's, I'm sure, a difficult part of your past, but can be such a great healing part for so many. Thank you for your romantic relationship with God. Okay, give her a hand, everybody.
Thank you.
God bless you. So in our follow-up, we call response time to what's happened to us here in our experience over the course of about an hour. We always want people to go away, if possible, with some resolution about something perhaps, maybe just some new information, maybe a principle of life, maybe something from God, a way about Jesus that you're knowing that you want to just emphasize more in your life. All those kinds of things are, I believe, really, really important to take away from a once-a-week experience with a church like the Branch Church. So we have these connection cards, and they meant to connect. And so I've pulled on you before, and we'd love to get one of these from every single person in this room. So whatever that is, 60.